Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
From Postcard from the Past and the award-winning Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where we celebrate azure skies, red-jumpered schoolboys and oversized black cats as we investigate old picture postcards. Their messages and their images take us from banality to heartbreak via kind wishes and weather reports. And we explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these little cardboard rectangles. Each time now, I welcome one guest, and it's their postcards that act as small clues to direct us towards memories, mysteries, and stories. I'm Tom Jackson. I'm delighted to say that today my guest on the podcast is curator at the Victorian Albert Museum in London, Ella Revilius. Ella, welcome to Podcasts from the Past.
Thank you.
Now, Ella specialises in design at the V&A, a fantastic place to work, and at the same time, she's currently completing a PhD in photographic history at De Montfort University, Leicester. Now, attentive listeners will recognise Ella's surname, and yes, she is the granddaughter of painter-illustrator Eric Revilius, and daughter, and more importantly, I suppose today, of photographer James Revilius. So she is steeped, professionally, personally, in her blood, in the visual arts. Ella joins us today bearing, I think that's an EX1819? A bit smudged, that postmark. Where's that?
So I'm talking about Dalton in Devon. So it's North Devon, but it's not near the coast.
Okay.
It's a small rural community, kind of off the tourist trail.
Is this where you grew up?
This is where I grew up. It's where I was born.
Wow.
So we lived there until I was seven, and then we moved to another village about 8 or 9 miles away.
Right.
So it's
still
it's
North
definitely,
Devon.
Yeah, definitely my roots.
And is that a place that still means a lot to you now?
Absolutely. I still have family there, and it still feels like home. And there have been a lot of changes, obviously, since I grew up there. But, yeah, it's still a very special place and still an area of North Devon that not many people know.
Right, because people tend to gravitate to the coast, I suppose, Appledore.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to find.
Maybe you like it that way. But I think we're going to be returning there, aren't we? Because I think it's tied in with your father's work, if I've got this right.
Yes, very much so. That's correct.
Excellent. Well, we'll get to that shortly. Before I go any further, Ella, do you still send postcards?
Yes, I do. Mainly to the older generation, to older friends of mine.
Keep them happy, you know. From your holidays or?
I have such a stash. Probably not as big a stash, perhaps, as you have, but certainly I've collected many over the years.
And there's of the kind that you are ready to send if required, sort of put your hand in the box and take one out, is it? Or?
Yeah, well, I take care to choose them. And,
yes, that's a big part of it, I think, choice.
Through a friend, I've become very interested in old museum postcards.
Ah.
So I've developed a bit of a, not quite a collection, but certainly a group of those. I like
it's an interesting
much.
Field, isn't it, museum cards?
Yeah, so my friend, Professor Elizabeth Edwards, is the huge specialist on museum postcards.
Is she writing something about the British Museum cards in particular?
Yes.
I think
yes.
I've come across it. It's a fascinating story because the government is often involved in this. It's sort of government postcards, aren't they?
Certainly, yeah. And they've really shaped the view of the museum for people who can't visit. But they've also shaped which objects in the museum become iconic to
right.
our museum.
Create a sort of pantheon of exhibits and objects.
Yeah. But it's specifically which ones are our sort of iconic favourite ones.
Right.
It's partly sort of based on which ones we had a happened to have photographed and happened to make a postcard of and happened to become sort of known about in the public consciousness as being at the V&A or at the British Museum.
And some things photograph better than others, don't they, or no?
Absolutely, yeah, though I would say our in-house photographers at the V&A were and are incredibly skilled. We were one of the first places to have in-house photography studio, in-house team. Our first photographer was appointed in 1856.
Goodness me.
To photograph museum objects. And it was something we really...
At the V&A?
At the V&A.
V&A was pretty brand new, 1856, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yep.
That's interesting. I suppose, well, perhaps it's to some extent part of the same project. You set up the museum, you get the photographer. It's all part of the new notion of, celebrating the empire, as it was, but the finest elements of it.
Well, it all came out of the Great Exhibition, in fact. It was the same photographer who'd worked for the first director during the Great Exhibition, and the V&A grew out of the Great Exhibition anyway.
So they just up the road.
So they just formalised an arrangement that, you know, a friend that they already had. Though, interestingly, we were the first place, we were very early in having a woman head photographer of the studio.
Really?
So this first photographer, Charles Thurston Thompson, dies in 1868. And his sister takes over.
Keep
and
it in
she,
the family.
She runs the studio
Brilliant.
For, I don't know, 20 years or so.
Right.
So a friend of mine, Erica Lederman, is doing a lot of research into her at the moment because she was completely unknown in the record. And we discovered that, we had this very early woman photographer running the place.
What a great thing to discover.
Yeah.
And you're quite involved in paper archives at the museum, so presumably you can get hold of her photographs and have a look at them, can you? Is that something you can do?
Yeah, I've worked at the V&A for a long time. I've worked there about 18 years, and I used to work a lot with storage and digitisation.
Yeah.
So I've moved everything, I've looked at everything.
Not only have you seen it, you know how heavy it is.
Exactly. Which is fantastic. I've got, you know, such riches in my mind's eye from things that I've seen in the collection.
Wonderful. Well, yes. Museum postcards. I shall look at them differently from now on. Now, before we see and hear about the cards that Ella's brought along, I'll give you a quick one of mine. This is, of course, a postcard from the past style card, like I do on Twitter and in the book. And let's start with this one. This is has something to appeals to me. It's a multi-view, various images on one card. Rather faded sort of colours. It was, I think they're probably black and white images that have been colour hand-coloured at some stage. Not this is a colour-printed card, but the original images were probably black and white. And it's greetings from Croydon, a place I have spent rather too many years, really. This is from 1966, sent from Croydon, and it's sent to Swansea. And the Frank on it actually is a sort of special one. It's to do with Dr. Bernardo's homes. And it's celebrating 100 years of Dr. Bernardo's homes from 1866. So the card is quite old, but it's taking you back another 100 years on the Frank. And I suppose the bit of the message that amused me is there's a couple of things, really. It says, "Dear all, this is to Mr. and Mrs. Bevan and family." That's a good Welsh name. Dear all, having a wonderful time. This is a grand spot for a holiday. And there's 3! Now, I like Croydon, but I'm not sure everyone would go along with that. And anyway, then John, Margaret and Michael, who are writing this, they say, "Wrong address on 3 previous attempts. Hope this reaches you okay." So I don't quite know how that works. I mean, they've tried 3 times to send cards from Croydon, and somehow they found out that they didn't get... Maybe they've been returned. I don't know. Would that happen? You get, like, not known at this address or something.
Yep.
But they persist. They keep going, and they really wanted to tell Mr. and Mrs. Bevan and family that Wandle Park, about 2 images of Wandle Park, and then Grange Park Lake and Coombe Cliff Gardens and the parish church was a grand spot for a holiday. There you go. That message had to get through. So, maybe it's the triumph of persistence. I don't know. I'll do another quick one. This is a perhaps somewhere you'd expect rather more of a postcard. Blackpool, again, a multi-view. Again, probably black and white images. I'm not sure of that, actually. They've certainly come out of colour on this card, but I'm removing a post-it note. That's what the sound is. And this is 1962, posted in Yorkshire, actually, Shipley. And it's sent to Aberford in Hampshire. Does that look like Aber? Or, I don't know. It doesn't sound quite right, that. But anyway, in Hampshire, certainly.
Yeah.
Sent to Mr. Dennis. Looks a bit like the postcard might be printed by Dennis, I'm not sure. And this is, let's see what... yes. Some of the details intrigue me, really. Dear R. Dennis, many thanks for parcel and letter. Sorry you've been kept so busy. Would happen like that, wouldn't it? Nice chatty, chatty style. Dad was pleased with his onion news. What happened about the gardens and shallots? Thanks for watering the plants, and please don't worry over them. Love from us at something. We're here today, Dad and Ernie. So there you are. So Dad was pleased to hear something about the onions. Maybe they're coming through well. I don't know. And of course, when you're away, having someone water your plants, that's a universal anxiety, isn't it? You go away at just the time when they could dry out and get spoilt. Anyway, I should remind everyone listening to the podcast, images of these cards, my cards, Ella's cards, any cards we mention, will be on the show notes, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see that these are real. Now, Ella, you have brought along two cards. Which one of these do you think we should start with?
I'm going to start with this one.
Okay.
As it's an earlier image.
Right.
And both of these are connected to my father, though he only composed one of them.
Right.
So he became a photographer, having incidentally seen a show of Henri Cartier-Bresson's work at the V&A and
right.
been blown away, dashed out by a camera.
This is what happens when you go to a good exhibition.
Exactly. And then he moved to North Devon with my mother and he started photographing. And there was a local archive called the Beeford Archive that gave him a job to document the local area. And this very small local area is sort of 30 miles sort of chunk.
And this is like a job on a wage kind of thing?
Yeah, not a huge wage, but a wage.
Yes.
And the archive is still going and it still owns his work. But he actually created two archives. So he started taking his own photographs, just of people and life and what was going on in that neighbourhood. But he went, in 1975, he went to a local WI meeting in one of the villages and he was invited to speak and also invited to judge the most interesting old photo competition.
Oh.
And he was so...
Must have been right up his street.
Well, yeah, he was so incredibly interested by what people brought that he thought, gosh, these should be documented.
Yes, these should
be recorded. Now, this was in 1975. It was before digital photography. So he started borrowing people's old photographs in the community and he got a copy stand and was making new photographs.
Right.
Of all these photographs and recording the information, the details about who was in them. And what was great about this was that the old archive, the images he was digitising, date from about the 1880s to the 1930s. And then he himself was photographing the same community in the 1970s.
Yes.
So every so often you'd get the same people.
Goodness me.
Turning up as babies or young men in the old archive.
A real continuity.
And he's taking them as elderly ladies and gentlemen. So it's this incredibly rich archive. And what's great about it is that he and all his colleagues that started to help, particularly George Tucker, recorded the names of the people in the photographs, which is incredibly rare to have. So for this postcard, actually written on it, it just says, Shewing, Dalton Forge, North Devon, 1914. So it doesn't say who's in the photograph.
So this is one that's been brought along, and he's taken another picture. He's taken in much the way your photographers at the museum would take photographs of
exactly
images.
Yeah.
Wow, it's a great picture in itself, though, isn't it?
Well, I like it, but thing is, without the names of the people, and in the format of a postcard, it's conjuring up a bit of an archetype, a bit of a stereotype.
Yes, yes.
But once you
know... The nostalgia card.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. But once you know the names of the people and yes. some of their stories, yes. it becomes something different.
Gives things more edges and corners and a little bit more real.
Absolutely. And it suddenly becomes specific.
So, but he captured it.
He did capture it.
He saved it from obscurity.
And he recorded the names. They're just not on the postcard
itself.
Oh,
I see. Okay, so they do exist.
So this is... From left to right, it's Robert Hurd, John Hurd, and Ernest Hurd, three
wow.
brothers.
Yes.
And at the end, shoeing the horse, is Reuben Clements. And the dog is called Chip, used to fetch the nails. Reuben Clements was the local blacksmith in Dalton.
Wow.
And...
Did you know this building?
I don't know the building, no. But it was the... Yeah. It was the forge. He lived in Pear Tree Cottage, which is just up the way,
which is
still there. And his family are still in the village. He has now passed. But my dad photographed Reuben many times. So he turns up. There's about 30 different images of him in the old archive. And Dad photographed him in the 70s as a much older man, obviously.
So he was photographing in a sort of split timeline?
Yes. Yeah.
Very interesting. That's time travel, isn't it? For real.
Yeah.
Because you're just seeing things in two different ways at once.
Yeah, and I mean, I was born in 1980, and I remember some of these people as very, very
yes.
elderly people. And to suddenly come across them in the old archive as young men and women was just
yes.
blew my mind. It was just incredible to me.
And it brings them to life in a way that, as you say, a sort of... an image that could be interpreted as cosy or nostalgic
yeah.
it actually deadens the senses a bit. But if you know who these people are, it
yeah.
does. There is something very different. You know their, you know, hopes and fears.
Well, exactly. And because this particular guy, Reuben Clements, was documented so much in both archives, particularly in the old archive, you get a sense of who he was. Like,
yes.
His was the kind of life that isn't normally recorded.
Yeah.
You know, he lived in a small village. He was the blacksmith. He was also champion bell ringer in Dalton.
Was he?
And...
How did he become a champion bell ringer?
Well, the competitions between the villages were big deal.
You just get the rhythm and you get it right.
Yeah, it was a big event, very competitive. There are photos of him with the bell ringing team, several photos, and one of them sat inside the bell.
Lovely. From the old days or from the...
From the old days,
right.
Yeah. So it was a really big deal. And he's also, there's great photos of him at Dalton Carnival, dressed up. They did really, really elaborate costumes. So one of the sisters of these brothers here, the Hurd brothers, their sister used to make these incredible carnival costumes.
Wow.
And these were made into a set of postcards by the village newsagent and photographer,
yes, yes.
Jay Dillon. And I love this set of photographs, this set of postcards so much.
So you've got a copy of those, have you?
Unfortunately, I don't.
You have access to them.
I can see them digitally, but otherwise I would have brought those
right,
too.
Right.
But and Dalton Carnival still continues. I was taken there as a child.
Right.
And, you know,
do you have a costume?
I did, yes. Not quite as good as what Emily Hurd could make.
Oh, well.
But it's documenting this stuff that just you wouldn't see otherwise.
Yes.
But I was also really interested why you would send this postcard, or why you would... Who was buying these photographs, these postcards of Dalton Carnival? Was it for local people to send out?
Oh, I see. You, at the time...
Yeah.
So, I think that would be it, wouldn't it? Be look what we got up to. Mm-hmm. I mean, these local... Every town had a postcard manufacturer because every town had a photographer.
Yeah, and it's a real interesting bit of sort of local industry as well. I'm amazed at the tininess of some of the villages that had a photographer
yes.
and postcard maker, and it often, in the very early days, it was often the chemist would also be a photographer because
right.
they had access to the chemicals
yes.
for photography. But later on it became the newsagent because they could retail the postcards that they made.
Probably better placed, really.
Yes. Yeah.
and probably knew printers better, or yes.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And so the cards that were produced contemporaneous with this image... Were they what they call real photographic cards? They printed up as photographs, or do you think they were printed with a more complicated printing technique that you may not know?
I don't know. I mean, this is a reprint of what was probably a postcard in the first place.
Produced for that.
And this one's a colour type, but yeah, it's hard to tell from the digitised image.
Yeah, okay, because you're another step along the thing. It amuses me because the image of they're very much posing, although there's an element of being caught in the moment. They're far from it. They're absolutely posing for the camera. Because that's what you have to do. I mean, exposures were still relatively long then as well. You had to stand pretty still, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, and the photographer managed to get the dog and the horses still as well. So it must have been, it was probably 3 or 4 attempts to get that, I think.
It reminds me of the cards that I do like seeing from that era of a row of donkeys and someone sort of holding them, looking rather sort of scowling at the camera normally as they try to keep 6 donkeys still just long enough, and often with blurry people, sort of ghost images going by, because you can control a certain amount, but you can't control everything on a beach. That's really interesting. So how many of the vintage photographs did your father re-photograph?
8,000.
8,000, goodness me. That's a labour of real importance.
Yeah, as I say, he started it, but he did have some help after a while. George Tucker took a lot of the photographs, and there were several archivists who helped record the data. So it is this really incredible archive, and it exists as 35mm negatives in the archive. It was digitised some decades ago, and we're hoping perhaps we can do the job again with modern technology, because there's such
richness. They don't stand
still,
these things, do they?
Yeah.
Nearly every generation thinks they've hit the last word in sort of archived and stable media. And, of course, 10 minutes later, you're looking at your microfiche and tutting. What the hell were we thinking?
This is very true.
Your CDs start to gain spots. Yeah, no, shocking. Well, that's very good. Thank you for taking us on 2 journeys backwards there. Another quick card from me now. This is... what have we got here? This is the post office tower, which is probably visible out the window if we crane our necks. From the iconography of old England to what was an absolute icon of modern England. This is from 1967, is that right? Was it built in 1967? Let's hope I got that right. And it's sent to Mrs. Shields, sorry, in Witham, in Essex, from Val. Val, who gives 4 kisses, so she's a very affectionate person. And it's the post office tower by night. And there's not a lot of tall buildings around it. There are more now, I think, really. But it's still an icon of the London skyline. And she says, my darling Row, maybe it's what Row be short for. Row, don't know. I genuinely prefer Liverpool Cathedral. But at least this is lit up, which is more than I can say after today's meetings. Home soon, all my love, Val. So, I mean, I don't know. When I see a building, I don't normally just give a comparison of something I like more. It seems a bit cruel to me, you know. You go to the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I prefer the Eiffel Tower. But anyway, Liverpool Cathedral was very new then, I suppose. It'd just been finished. So maybe she was doing a tour of modern white heater technology kind of icons of Britain. I don't know.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Podcast from the Past, Postcard Podcast. My guest today is Ella Revilius. Now, here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. And it's a postcard from the New Forest in Hampshire. It's two horses. We've had horses, more horses. One is eating and one is a little foal that's lying on the ground in the sunshine. Very nice. And it says, would you please play for my two grandsons' birthday, Snoopy versus the Red Baron? Duncan will be 2 on June the 13th and Sean will be 5 on July the 13th. They are both very good boys and have brought my husband and myself a lot of happiness. Here's hoping the 13th will be lucky for us again. Thank you, Jay McCausland. Well, I'm sorry, Jay McCausland. We don't take requests. Now, Ella, let's get back to the postcard stories. Let's go to the second card you've brought along. Now, this is again connected with your father, James Revilius. This is one of his?
Yes, this is a photograph he took himself in the Great Blizzard of 1978. So February 1978 in the West Country was this incredibly heavy snowstorm.
Right. I don't remember this. Was it mainly the West Countries that got affected?
Yes.
I don't remember 1978 very well. But...
it was particularly the West Country, right. But it was really, really notable,
wow.
Yeah. People still talk about it. And my dad was going out photographing just every day. He found it so
brilliant.
Incredibly rich for photography. But the snow was so deep. So Devon has very narrow, overgrown roads with really high, thick hedges. And he recorded he had to walk on top of the hedges because if he stepped off, he'd just land in
into a sort of Canadian-style snowdrift.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah. So he took this photograph, and this is... See, for me, I look at this image, and I can see things that aren't there. I can see...
You should describe it as you do.
So it's a man in the snow with a flat cap and a big sort of greatcoat that's tied with baler twine, and he's holding a wisp of straw, and he's in the deep snow. And,
up to, beyond his knees, I'd say.
Yeah, and he's got a lamb holding it by the front leg in one hand, and the worried ewe is the other side of him. And he's just dug them out of a snowdrift in this great blizzard. Unfortunately, they're Devon Longwools, I think.
Right.
They were his neighbour's sheep.
Okay.
And unfortunately, the lamb didn't make it.
Oh, goodness me. Is that apparent? I suppose you can't tell, but you know.
Yeah, I think that's the ewe. I think they were stuck together for several days in this incredibly deep snow. But what isn't in the image, but what I can see, is I know that behind the camera is not only a very cold photographer with a lot of kit on him.
Yeah.
And gloves with one finger cut off so he can press
still get to the camera, right?
Yeah. And then behind that is the cottage that I grew up in.
Oh, that's where it is?
Yeah, yeah. So this was in front of our house. So I know
it looks like it's in the middle of nowhere from that angle because it's just white out, isn't it?
Yeah, we were
yes, where you live.
So I'm seeing all these things that aren't there. I'm seeing around the edges of,
yes.
of the photograph.
Well, and only you and your close relatives would see that, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it really... I mean, I wasn't born when this was taken, but there were still Ivor Brock and people like him around when I was small. And there was definitely a kind of uniform of, you know, the ratty wool, big sort of probably an army greatcoat.
Yes.
Tied with string, because in case you might need a bit of twine while
you were... got it handy, yeah.
Yeah, but also to keep it closed. And the flat cap and probably a pipe in his pocket.
In itself, this all feels like... a very distant past, doesn't it?
Well, I know, and I mean, this is before high performance gear this is, you know, no waterproofs here. He's probably in leather boots.
And a woolen coat would get pretty wet and heavy.
Exactly, exactly. So this is quite a piece of history, really.
And a lot of your father's photographs have a documentary feel to them. Often much lighter subjects than this, really, a village life. But this is a moment of drama.
Yeah, I'd say he did try and document everything. So it's understandable that the lightest ones and the nicest ones are perhaps the best known.
Bubble to the surface.
But he definitely documented some more difficult bits of village life. He just wanted to capture everything. He talked about it as like he was stitching a tapestry of everything that was going on. And people would tell him. So he was a very genial guy and he would get talking to people, for example, like the WI meeting.
Yeah.
And people would tell him what was going to happen, what was going on, what he might like to photograph. And when he photographed people, he would often go back and give them a print of the photograph.
Right.
And, of course, we lived there.
So this wasn't an exploitative process. It was a copy, more shared process.
Yeah, we were part of the community. I mean, my brother and I, we went to the local school. We'd see these people in the shop.
You couldn't stitch them up.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, it wasn't Dad's temperament, but we really couldn't have done.
Yeah.
And there were occasionally photographs where people later were unhappy about it, you know, say he photographed a marriage and the marriage didn't work out. He would...
You can't blame him for that.
Well, no, but he would respect people's wishes about that photograph.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose that is the difference between flying in as a war photographer and being in a community.
Exactly. And we were there for, 20 years. It's not... he definitely wasn't passing through.
Yes. Very... And did you tell me the name of this man?
Ivor Brook.
That's Ivor Brook. Wow. And this was then printed up as a postcard?
Yes.
This is an oversized, a modern postcard size.
Yeah, so it's published by North Devon Holiday Centre.
Was it?
With a credit to the Beeford Archive, who own the work. But it's always struck me as odd, because why would you choose this postcard on a shelf? What would you want to be saying to whoever you were sending?
So this was 78, you said?
Yeah.
I suppose, I'm not trying to answer your question, it's a rhetorical question, I know, but I do remember that in the early 80s, there was a real fashion for artistic postcards that had a more of a, and actually as a result, some of the views that were taken were kind of charmless because they were over-filtered and strange. But black and white images also were becoming fashionable, so I suppose... But actually, this is a pretty brutal image to fit into that category. It's having a great time on my holiday in Devon.
Exactly.
Look, a dead lamb. Yeah. It's not an obvious choice, is it?
No. I mean, there are others that are more gentle. There's one that he took, I think, about 6 days after I was born. And the district nurse has visited our cottage.
Oh.
And I'm being weighed. So I'm sort of in a wrapped in a blanket. You can't see me. And she's got one of those sort of cooking weights that you hold up.
Yes.
And so I'm at this lump in a blanket.
So another one where you know who it is, but other people wouldn't know.
Yeah, the caption just says, wearing a new baby, but it's me, and it's in our house.
Oh, lovely.
And that one is very... I always find excuses to send that one to people.
Right.
But this one,
yes,
less so, I guess.
But it's a stunning shot. It really, really... And people will be able to see if they click on the website. But it has a kind of... that heavy greyness that real snow brings, that it's almost like a wash of grey over the whole thing. It's although the images are, there's a starkness to the black and white of it, there's nonetheless, there's this sort of, you feel like you can't quite see, you can't quite get through. It's brutal.
Well, that was something that he really put work into. So he used a Leica camera, and he was very careful. He didn't crop his images.
Right.
So he...
Oh, okay.
What you
printed
got.
As taken.
Yeah. And he was very... he got very expert in the printing and would deliberately take photos one way in order to print them slightly another.
Okay.
So he's very interested in getting those greys. And he would use pre-war uncoated lenses onto his Leica camera to get a slightly softer, slightly different effect.
Interesting.
And he kept experimenting. He even built a plate camera.
Right.
From scratch, a whole plate camera, and tried glass plate negatives. He was always experimenting with photographic tech.
Brilliant.
You were a real tinkerer. And I remember his camera, like, it's got loads of sort of marks and scratches covered in gaffer tape. And in fact, Mum remembers...
If it works.
My mother remembers that he cut up one of her saucepans to make a fitment, I think for a viewfinder or a light meter.
Wow. So he was in Photography Weekly, I don't think.
Well, he's definitely customised, heavily customised his cameras to get the kind of effects that he wanted.
There is an argument, you know, every photograph is an experiment, isn't it, to some extent? So I guess it's sort of in there, if you're a photographer, it is sort of in your DNA to keep, you're always trying to do something different. So, amazing. It's actually very classically composed, isn't it, as a frame. It's very, very powerful.
Well, he really had this library of other art in his head all of the time. So here, he was very inspired with the printmaker Samuel Palmer.
Oh, yes.
So there were photographers that inspired him, like Henri Cartier-Bresson, but he also had this library of painters, of printmakers, and people like Samuel Palmer. He would have been thinking of particular works by him and composing his shots. He wanted that silveriness that you get in Samuel Palmer engravings, particularly.
And a kind of a mystical rural tradition as well, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing, amazing. Well, Ella, thank you for sharing one of the worst nights of North Devon's history, really. That was a terrible, terrible time, but really interesting. And sort of the way these bounce across different bits of time is fascinating. Really good. I would say the same thing. I never know where the cards will send us. I'm delighted that you brought them along and shared them with me and with the listeners. People at home, you will be very keen to see these images, I know. So if you go to the website, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, you'll be able to see the cards I've got and Ella's cards from James Revillius. Now, before we let Ella out into much better weather, very warm sunshine today, it is a habit of ours to end the show with one of these. So I'm just going to pass this across to Ella to have a look at. So what have we got there? Perhaps you could share with your thoughts with our listeners.
So it's not a postcard, as far as I can tell.
I beg to differ.
It's larger than a normal postcard.
That's true.
It's a coloured print of two Russian young women.
Hungarian,
okay.
You're going to catalogue this, I know.
And it looks like it might be a record.
You've
I can
it.
See grooves on it. And there's a hole in the centre of the image.
For the spindle.
And
so it is a postcard. It's a musical postcard.
Wow.
Where the grooves have been stamped onto the sort of little thin layer of gloss on the card itself. Now, young Tom next door from Wardour Studios has had advanced sight of this, and he has, I think, made a digital file of it, and we can see what the postcard sounds like. Bit of crackle. That's a good start. Oh. Oh, they're singing. So they're spinning women, I think. They've been spinning hemp and flax on the long winter evenings. Young girls gathered by tens or dozens in a group. Well, anyway, it's another image of rural life in a different place and a different time. But you're right, we'd have trouble writing. Writing does more or less cover it, so as a postcard, it's perhaps pushing our luck a bit. You're probably right there. So it does say with compliments of, maybe that counts.
And is Colourvox the brand?
Yes. Colourvox made a lot of these. There were a few companies who made these postcards out of cardboard.
I've never seen one before.
Oh. They don't crop up every day, but there's one or two in my... I wouldn't call that an archive, but anyway, in the boxes.
It's amazing.
Well, as the Hosher Hepney spinners continue to spin at 45 RPM. That's it for this time on Podcast from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guest for sharing the postcards from her past, Ella Revillius. Ella, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. do follow me at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.